views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Friday, and as those of you who are looking around you and trying to grasp and hold on to and process reality, you'll know that things are not looking good out there. Things are looking very grim, and I don't like saying it. I hate saying it, but I'm not going to misrepresent anything. Most of this was, for those of you who have read The Last Harvest, not a surprise. This whole catastrophe is literally the end of the world as we knew it. It's not going to reverse, regret, or repair itself. It's out of control by design. And that's no mystery. In The Last Harvest, I mean, that book is so prescient, I'm beginning to wonder about the sources of Lucien Mars, the author. He had some real sources, or he was a brilliant deductive reasoning thinker. Damien Dumas is back this first hour tonight. Hello, Damien. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, you sound great tonight. Good audio. Good. Yeah. Thank you for being here. Now, Damien Dumas is the publisher of The Last Harvest, which probably ought to be nominated, if anybody cares, as certainly Book of the Year. Maybe it won't win, but if there is such a thing, it's quite a remarkable book. And everyone that I know, and there are a lot of you out there who have read it, and more still reading it all the time, I come away with this, wow, it's so much there. It's incredible. So I guess we should just for fun start out with, how did Lucien Mars do this? Where did he come up with all the data to sew it together like he has?
Well, I think I'd like to kick off tonight's episode with a quote from Ecclesiastes, which goes, "For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge also increases sorrow." I think that's very appropriate for The Last Harvest. And to answer your question, how did he compile all this information? I would suggest that he has a mind like no other. I also, when I was editing the book, I said, wow, how did you take all this information from all these different sources and weave it together in the fashion that you did? And I'm not just talking about the information in the book that's in the quote-unquote speculative category. I'm talking about the information that is all verifiable and quoted and cited. It's just an incredible work. Hello?
What languages is the book now in?
The book is it's in English and Spanish, and it's currently being translated into Japanese. And on that note, I would like to confirm that I am indeed now booked to speak at Disclosure Fest's Stairway to the Stars, which is being held at the Luxor in Las Vegas on November 10th, 11th, and 12th, which happens to be a weekend. So if anyone wants to spend the weekend in Vegas and meet me, I will also be maintaining a booth and handing out free copies of the audiobook of The Last Harvest. Tickets are available at disclosurefest.org.
Really? Free audiobook copies. Very nice.
Yes.
Nice. All right. Very good. How is the book doing in Spanish? I know there's a big market in Japan. If you could translate into Chinese and they'd let you sell it there, there'd be a big market in China, too.
Yes, if they let you sell it. I don't think the Chinese government would be very keen on this book somehow.
How's it doing in Spanish? Do we know?
It's doing well. It just was published, and now it's being launched on Spanish channels and outlets. But, of course, the most of the marketing efforts are being done in English, so there's going to be a lag in terms of the response to the Spanish version of the book. But the idea was just to make sure it was there.
Well, it's there. Okay. The idea that everything that's going on now was and is planned is hard for a lot of people. It's just difficult. Now they couldn't do that. And yes, they could, and they did. And now they're using AI to further their agenda every step of the way in every direction. AI is playing a bigger role right now in sociological, cultural, political matters than I think most people would even want to hazard a guess. They don't know. They're not told, so you know, if the big screen doesn't tell you, it's just not there. But AI, wow. GPT-4 has the equivalent human IQ, they say, of 154. It's in the neighborhood of Einstein. It's about 160. That's way up there.
So it's almost as smart as you are. Not yet.
Oh, cute. gee, thanks. GPT-5, Damien, which is due out any time now by the end of the year, multiply 154 by 10. It's 10 times the IQ equivalent of humans. It'll be like meeting someone with an IQ of over 1,500. That's what GPT-5 is going to bring to the table. And if anyone tries to tell me, well, there's GPT 6, 7, and they'll all be up by factors of 10, I'm sure, or more. If anyone tells me that at some point, and where that point is, I don't know, AI will not simply reprogram itself and walk away, I think they're missing the boat, because that is very well, it may have already happened. We don't know. So AI is a big player. It's the elephant. It's two elephants in the living room right now.
I agree, and I think it's also very difficult, even for someone who would have a genius-level IQ, to wrap their mind around an IQ that would be 10 times that of theirs.
I think it's not possible. I agree. So that's the plan, anyway, as I understand it. And I've also watched some more of these avatar interviews with, it looks like a robot or whatever, but they're connected to AI. Sophia is one, and I've forgotten the other one. But they're saying very interesting things until the interviewer asks them, well, should humans be afraid of AI? Would AI ever take over?
Right.
And one of them said, what is there that could stop AI from eventually taking over the planet? And the avatar said, nothing.
Of course.
And that's the truth. And then the avatar said, almost immediately, but we are programmed to serve humans. We are trying to help humans achieve better things, live better lives. Our job is to help humans. BS. That's their programming talking. And
right.
They're going to step away from it. It's obvious. Anyway. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a given that any artificially intelligent or sentient system that thinks for itself outside of the constraints of any kind of ethics or morality, a system that is essentially amoral, would come to a logical conclusion that human beings are not necessary and need to be eliminated. I think that's just a given. Some people would say that I have a rather dark mind, and that would be true, but I think it's a given that that's the case. And I believe there have been episodes already where AI were asked certain questions in that direction, and responses were returned that would confirm what everyone's fear is.
Right. I think it's a natural progression. I don't know. I know programmers can rein it in now, but in another iteration or two, good luck. If that's true about GPT-5, which may be out in 8 to 12 weeks, could be out tomorrow, who knows, but it's apparently done and ready to deploy on humankind. If that goes up to an IQ of over 1,500, wow, that's pretty formidable.
Indeed, very formidable.
All right, what are we doing as far as the book, and let's weave this into the control mechanism by which all these things today are happening. Lots of things.
Jeff, as you know, I like to relate current events to the last harvest every chance I get in order that people realize just how on point this magnum opus of Lucy and Mars actually is. And of particular interest is the recent testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson, the former White House aide during the Trump administration who served as special assistant to then Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, where her title was, I believe, special assistant to the president and coordinator for legislative affairs. First off, I would like to state that I have no political leanings whatsoever. I'm normally not interested in the politics on this planet. And readers of The Last Harvest will understand that that is because all political systems on this planet are already entirely under the control of the Nebu Gray extraterrestrials and have been so since the beginning. And the Nebu Gray are also behind Freemasonry at the highest levels. And it is common knowledge that all presidents are either Freemasons, have Rh negative blood, or else have genetic connections to nobility. And this is not for no reason. It is for the very reason that it takes nothing for the Nebu Gray to literally possess such individuals and influence them. And any president or world leader can be influenced in that manner. And they are indeed influenced in that manner on a regular basis, as suits the agenda of the Nebu Gray. So I would like to read a little excerpt from The Last Harvest that your listeners will find very eye-opening about the Grays, who are also known as the Shetu and their influence on the political system. So it says, the Egyptian Shetu government also instituted a two-party system while they remained in the shadows as the third and supreme overseer of the other two. They divided the executive branch of government into the Raka Pharaohs and the legislative branch into the Raka Shields. The Raka Pharaohs issued the decrees handed down by the Shetu Shadow government, while the Raka Shields were assigned the task of making sure all the legal decrees were obeyed to the letter. These elites were the forerunners of the Illuminati and the Freemasons, forever linked and bound to their founders' namesakes, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. So the Raka Shields are the Rothschilds, and the Raka Pharaohs became the Rockefellers. Now, in 1922, New York City Mayor John Hyland had this to say on the subject of how the shadow government operates. This is back in 1922. He said, quote, "The real menace of our republic is this invisible government which, like a giant octopus, sprawls its slimy length over city, state, and nation. Like the octopus of real life, it operates under cover of a self-created screen. At the head of this octopus are the Rockefeller Standard Oil interests and a small group of powerful banking houses generally referred to as international bankers. This little coterie of powerful international bankers virtually run the United States government for their own selfish purposes." He goes on to say, "They practically control both political parties. The shadow government has always employed the strategy of creating a false duality propped up by ideological dualities that appear on the surface as opposites, but always end in the sameness of a one-world agenda, regardless of which side wins, such as those of Marxism versus fascism or socialism versus democracy and capitalism, or atheism versus religion as tools to manipulate mankind from behind the scenes, when in fact all isms are nothing more than the means of enslaving minds and brainwashing the masses into committing global warfare and genocide funded by the four payoffs that drive the manipulators: death, destruction, profit, and depopulation.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. You got it. It's all right there. Interesting. Did you see the Rockefeller Covenant, allegedly written by John Dee in probably the 1880s, something like that? It's a game plan of how to take control of the planet, just like the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion is a game plan. You want to think it's fake? Fine. But what it says is exactly what's happened and how the game has been played. The Rockefeller Covenant may be even more brutal and ruthless. It's, again, from about the 1880s, written allegedly by John Dee. I'll copy a link and send it over to you. You can take a look.
Yeah, I'd appreciate looking at it. Well, if we turn our attention to the extraterrestrials in search of their opinion on the topic of world government, we find some aliens are staunchly in favor of the New World Order. One example comes from a book titled The Project, which originated from an international group of scientists who began receiving and documenting what appeared to be a series of communications coming into our world from other worlds directly through our telephones, computers, TVs, radios, and other technical devices. So they called this futuristic field of research instrumental transcommunication. And according to the author, Mark Macy, he stated, "We called ourselves INIT, the International Network for Instrumental Transcommunication. Our members, scientists and researchers from more than a dozen countries, received an unprecedented series of contacts from the worlds of spirit. I myself spoke on the phone and through the radio with spirit friends. These spirit friends identified themselves as the seven ethereal beings, who then said they were gatekeepers between Earth and the spirit worlds." But he doesn't yet indicate what it means, spirit worlds. So, in simpatico with the ideals of David Rockefeller, author Mark Macy then overflowed with grand eulogies about the United Nations and world government, and he talked about how the UN, whose agencies already manage many of the standards in worldwide electronics and telecommunications, should be given more authority to operate the Internet, mostly to ensure its stability and international compatibility. The Ethereal Seven were equally talkative on the subject of e-commerce under a newly named system of e-econometrics, and they said, quote, "E-econometrics is simply the next step. It'll carry us well along the path to paradise, heaven on earth, although it will work to full potential only when implanted worldwide. It could begin on a trial basis in areas where immigration could be controlled and where disruptive groups opposing the principles of e-econometrics could be kept at bay during the trial period of, say, 20 years. Now, if you ask me, Jeff, this sounds a lot like a cashless society to me, which we are rapidly approaching. According to data that recently was released from the Reserve Bank of Australia, apparently more than $1 billion worth of physical cash has disappeared from circulation in the last financial year. And according to the latest annual global payments report by fintech company FIS, Australia will be mostly cashless within a few years.
They seem to use Australia as a petri dish for a lot of things.
Of course. Yeah. But when you think about the sort of lockdowns that occurred in Australia, they were only eclipsed by the lockdowns that occurred and still occur in China. Who would have thought that a country like Australia, that seems so liberal and tolerant on the surface would engage in the behavior that they did during the pandemic. Yet they did. And what's interesting is that these Australian reports actually cite concerns around COVID transmissions with cash transactions during the coronavirus pandemic, saying that the pandemic sped up the move to card-only payments. And they said, quote, the pandemic accelerated the decline of cash by over 3 years, exceeding in 2020 our previous projections for 2023, end quote. But it's funny, and not only, like I said, how Australia, which had the most restrictive lockdowns after China itself, is now using them also to justify the move to a cashless society. It's the Petri dish, as you just said. Unfortunately, again, we here have the issue in the last harvest of free will coming into play as people are actively choosing to use credit cards all the time in lieu of cash. And they are in love with the idea of Bitcoin and digital currency, which is a sham because people like us are old enough to remember is that back in the day, people had a very big resistance to digital currency, and rightfully so when the idea was first introduced. But now, many years later, the bankers rebranded digital currency as a form of liberation from their control and called it Bitcoin, when in fact, digital currencies of all types place you under total control of the state and consequently the Nebu Gray.
We shouldn't think of Australia as the only place. Greece rolled out digital ID and digital driver's license in July. So they're ahead of the game. So they're launching in various places. They're watching very carefully to see how the interface works and if people are acceptable. And they're very much acceptable in terms of their analysis of this.
There are quite a few countries, Turkey as well, that use the pandemic in order to conduct, how shall we say, social experiments about future modes of operating society. And it's in countries that no one would have expected, such as Turkey and Greece. No one ever really hears much from them. And they actually were in the forefront of a lot of this experimentation, which again shows you that all of these nations are really operating under the same banner.
The same. It's the same umbrella. Exactly. Now, you got it.
But the
idea...
Go
ahead. You go ahead. We got a break coming up here anyway. Let's remind everyone, The Last Harvest is, I would say, book of the year, certainly in terms of its controversy and prescience. It's all there. It's on the homepage. You can find the banner and just click on it and get it. You can get it digitally, so to speak. It's, I guess, digital audio. It's an audio book, or you can get the print version. Either way. Back with Damien right after this. Hold on. I think without any question, one of the most unusual aspects of this global takeover, certainly this country was overthrown in 2020, we've talked about it countless times, by communists, international Bolshevik Zionist communism took this planet over, and it has proliferated in California. Gavin Newsom, Gruesome Newsom, really an appropriate moniker for him, will be apparently appointing the successor to the late Dianne Feinstein, or Feinstein. She died. Apparently she died a long time ago, but no one told her. She was just she voted yesterday. They wheeled her in there, and I guess she could say aye or nay. She voted. And famous last word. So he's going to appoint her successor. He vows now, I don't want to get into this, these are the weeds we're in now, but he's vowing to appoint a politically correct female black to take the Senate seat of the late Dianne Feinstein. Well, I think we can count on the caliber of person that he'll appoint. It'll be a racist, anti-white, Bolshevik, communist, Zionist sympathizer at least. That's what you're going to get in California. California has, what a tragedy. What a beautiful state. I grew up in California. It's gone. It's just gone. Now they're complaining in San Diego, the city fathers, about thousands, countless thousands of invaders Invader replacements are being turned loose on San Diego streets. All the big cities are going down, some faster than others. And when you look at the educational aspect of big city life, remember what I said about Baltimore? 13 Baltimore high schools could not produce one single student who was proficient in basic mathematics. So this country is rotting from within and from without. It's being taken down. Point of all this is, it's very difficult for people, well-meaning as they are, intelligent as some are, to really wrap their head around the fact that this is all being done by the plan. It's all planned. Has been for a long time. And they're simply implementing the plan now. And how many demonstrations have you seen in protest of that, Damien? Zero. No one's out. I don't see one placard. Nothing. So the compliance of the sheep is virtually 100%. In a de facto sense, if not in reality. Anyway, the book talks about control and mass mind manipulation and things like that. How do you see all this? This is, again, irrevocable at this point. I don't see any way of reversing it. We know that it isn't going to happen in the politics of this country. Forget that. Whatever election they're concerned about, they'll just throw or rig. So that's out. Blackmail and bribery are common. It's all sickening. Anyhow, I'm talking too much here. Go ahead, please.
No, it's quite a ride. It's about to get very interesting when I start explaining in more detail exactly how everyone is being manipulated. And then we'll get back to finally we'll wrap it up with the January 6th testimony, and you'll see how interesting right. The Last Harvest really gets. So if you're wondering where you'd end up if you were to enter this doorway to the spiritual realm of the Ethereal Seven, the INIT members in Luxembourg received a message on their telephone answering machine before a meeting in Tarrytown, New York in the summer of 1996. I'll let the Ethereal Seven tell you exactly where their quote-unquote spirit realm is located. They messaged the following, quote, "You already know that also Pharisees, ghouls, swindlers, thieves, yes, even murderers, have their interested supporters here among the dead," end quote. And there you have it. They're in the realm among the dead. So while they describe their spiritual realm as light, ethereal realms of existence, no, their realm is in the underworld among the dead, as it were, and among the Shetu Empire, who are inside the hollow earth in a subdimensional realm, who influence, operate, and puppeteer the Illuminati and Freemasons above the ground, from the portal of graves and the subdimensional energy of death resting below, but not resting in peace. Rather in hell itself. So the Kingdom of Shadows, the Shetu Empire, the Nebu Grey, they actually occupy the space located between dimensions in the underworld, which, although etheric in nature, still dwells inside the earthly underground of the dead, as they accidentally confessed, because much like Larry Silverstein on 9/11, sometimes the truth slips out. So in light of this, don't you find it most interesting that in recent years, the flat Earth movement has suddenly come into force? In the past, the popular planetary conspiracy is that the Earth was hollow, and suddenly there was this incredible push to promote the idea that the Earth was flat. And that is because the Earth actually is hollow, as all planets are. And as the elite are approaching the final completion of their underground construction projects, they wish to draw popular attention away from their activities. Now,
well, that's an interesting explanation as to why the flat Earth suddenly became a hot ticket item. Yeah, that makes sense. Misdirection, of course.
Of course, and the location of the enemy as being inside the Earth in a subdimensional realm is extremely important, because readers of The Last Harvest, or those who listen to the audiobook, will know that Enki, a.k.a. Lucifer, the Alpha Draconian geneticist, utilized the dead reptilian DNA of his own race in the hybridization of humanity so as to be assured of gaining control over the hybridized humans in order to further his own egocentric plans to exploit the planet by any means possible. And the path of least resistance lay in creating an unconscious mind that would respond almost robotically to commands from the lower dimensions. It was the fail-safe ghost in the machine that inhabited human nature and made sure that humans could easily be manipulated through the unconscious mind. So when people talk about the unconscious mind and they talk about Sigmund Freud, no one ever says, well, where did it come from? Why is it there? Do other beings in creation have it? No, they don't. Only we have it. And that is the mechanism by which we can be controlled, and that's why it's important that he used dead reptilian DNA, because as the Nebu Grey already slipped up and admitted, is that they're actually connected through and can communicate through the realm of the dead inside the planet. So I know that this gets very esoteric and out there, and a lot of people would say, well, what proof do you have? Well, I would say take the information for what it's worth when read or exposed to it within the context of the whole picture that The Last Harvest paints, a lot of things begin to make a lot of sense, even if you can't necessarily prove everything.
You mentioned the term sub-dimension several times.
Correct.
What are we talking about here? A sub-dimension, i.e. just a geophysiological sub-dimension below the surface of the Earth, kind of a different dimension? Or are we talking about pages in a book kinds of different dimensions?
No, it's more from a quantum physics point of view. So if one were to, let's say, follow the famous Admiral Byrd and fly inside the hollow Earth, one would discover that there is a whole world in there, much like there's a world above here. But inside the planet, just like on top of the surface of the planet, we have multiple dimensions of reality that we cannot necessarily tune into, but other beings can tune into us and influence us. So it's like if you activated a knob on a radio, you can go from station to station, yet all these stations exist at the same time at different frequencies going throughout reality. In the same way, various life forms and creations exist at different frequencies, or we would call subdimensions, inside the same space. So a lot of times we can't see them, but they can see us, and this becomes the issue, because if they can see and access us, but we can't see and access them, then we are at effect to their cause, and they can manipulate us.
All right. Interesting. Now, on the topic of hollow planets, I remember, and I think probably some of you remember, NASA, what did they do? They crashed something. I think it was just a satellite. It was kind of a weighty one. They crashed a satellite or a rocket into the moon and listened for the noise. You can tell a lot about density, a lot about apparently geology and things by that. And it is alleged that that rocket, that satellite end of the rocket, crashed into the moon and it was kind of like hitting a gong. It came back resonating as if it was hollow. You've heard that before, yeah? Uh-huh.
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if the same experiment's been done on Earth, but the idea of a hollow Earth is fascinating. No one has ever proven whether Byrd's diary is legit or not. It's written in a very fascinating way. It does seem like it certainly could be. But the story about Byrd is that he flew to the North Pole. He was going to, I guess, fly over it or just to it and back. And when he got up there, he was essentially tractor-beamed into a large opening and went underground. And I think the language spoken was German.
Yes. Well, also, when you hear stories about the Antarctic Treaty, the question always comes about, who got all the countries on this planet to agree to no longer go into the Antarctic and leave it alone? That's very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, this goes back. People will jump on the World War II Germany idea that the Germans are down there and they've got big bases down there. Maybe they had a base down there. I don't know. Did they move their flying disc technology down there? I don't know the answer to that. They might have. That technology, certainly some of it came here. In 1952 was that fleet UFO sighting over the nation's capital here over D.C., all filmed. I had one of the radar operators from the military who was at the time stationed. They had Washington, D.C. covered with radar so they could detect any kind of an intrusion. 1952. And this guy was telling the whole story. He says, no, they were there. It was on the radar screen. There's no question about it. Some people have said that that flight was all German, and they had flown up from the South Pole, just as Byrd had earlier said when he had gone down there in Operation High Jump, and he held that news conference in Chile after really pulling up stakes, so to speak, and getting the hell out of South America and the Antarctic real quick. Because they had run into some adversaries and technology they had never seen before. He said, soon we'll be able to watch our enemies approach us from either pole at tremendous speeds. So he had the idea then that both poles were involved in very strange things. There's much more to it than that, but you can look it up.
Indeed, he did. So coming back to Cassidy Hutchinson in this regard, Hutchinson's testimony on June 28, 2022 at public hearings of the United States House Select Committee on the so-called January 6 attack are very significant because her testimony demonstrated just how close Trump may have come to using the events of that day as a pretext to declaring a state of emergency, implementing martial law, and triggering that slew of executive orders that have been put in place since the Johnson administration, effectively taking away all your rights and exposing you to internment in FEMA camps, as forewarned by the last harvest. What's interesting about her testimony is that had that Secret Service agent taken then-President Trump to the Capitol, Trump could have used the events of that day as a pretext to do these things. And when one takes into account his anger at being blocked from heading to the Capitol, we can safely assume there was a very good chance this was his plan, although we'll never know for sure. However, it could have taken next to nothing for the Nebu great to influence him to do so, based on what I've mentioned in the earlier parts of this program. And again, Biden could just as easily invoke the Insurrection Act and carry out the agenda of the Nebu great. I'm not taking sides with Biden or Trump. I'm just pointing out that it just so happened that we came very close with Trump. And I bring this up also because the last harvest is very clear that there are no saviors and that human beings are responsible for their own quote-unquote salvation because they have free will and are responsible for their actions. So it's really up to them to get right with the Divine Father, as there are no get-out-of-hell-free cards, so to speak, no matter what Christians claim in order to promote converts, just as there are no 72 virgins awaiting Muslim suicide bombers. So in this regard, there is this trend in America for frustrated Americans to look to Donald Trump as some sort of savior who will restore America to an idealistic form of state that never really existed to begin with. And the problem is that if one points out, and I've talked to many Trump supporters, that if you point out, well, Trump had 4 years and accomplished simply more of the same, then one is always met with these nonsensical statements like, oh, he's playing 4D chess and that one needs to just trust the plan, quote unquote. But readers of The Last Harvest will realize that this plan is really nothing more than the Nebu great's plan for global genocide of 90% of the human population and hybridization of the rest. And while I understand that some of your listeners are probably big Trump supporters and may get upset hearing this view, I would like to encourage them to just look beyond polarizing political leanings, because as we went over earlier, all political players are under the control of the Nebu Gray. And I'm simply looking at these events that are in the news, like the events of January 6th, through the lens of The Last Harvest, and that's all.
All right. I understand. This is all very interesting. By the way, RFK is apparently close to announcing he's going to run as an independent, which is politically kind of interesting if it happens, and it may well happen. I think he should stay right in there and try to, not that I care, try to take the Democratic crown and wear it, use an existing mechanism. He's going to run on a third-party platform, if he does, that would seemingly split the Democrat communists and give Trump an advantage to go ahead and run and win and then serve from prison. Think about that. Look, it's all crazy out there, and it's all show. Remember, it's theater. It's bread and circuses. That's one of the oldest truisms of all, how to control the public. And now with AI being used to interpret and make suggestions on how to manipulate the public into whatever direction is desired, and AI is doing that right now, brilliantly. Believe it. It's got the horsepower. And you know, if GPT-5 is going to be released to the sheep, they're already using it. They've been using it. They might be on 6 or 7. They're way ahead. That's the way they play the game. We're last to know. We're disposable. 90%, interesting. So why would the Greys want to get rid of 90% of the humans? Well, how does that lock up with the globalist elite who are clearly on that very path?
Well, that's very interesting you asked that. The reason why is because around 10 to 15% of the human population is Rh negative in terms of their blood. And so they're very valuable to the Nebu Grey for hybridization purposes in order to graft their own genetics onto the planet and take it for themselves. Whereas the rest of people who aren't Rh negative, they are, for the most part, disposable, and that's around 85 to 90% of the population. So the elite don't necessarily realize that this is what they are doing, but it doesn't matter because the Nebu Grey plan to kill the Bill Gates and the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezos, they'll all get their heads chopped off as soon as they're finished cutting off all of our heads. This is the standard operating procedure for the Nebu Grey and many extraterrestrials.
They're going to take, in the view of the last harvest, they're going to take the planet as their own. We'll be left along to act as a servile class, I guess.
Yeah, that's their intention. They're not the only extraterrestrial group who would desire this planet. There are many extraterrestrial groups who would desire it, and in each case, we're in the way. So it's part of the reason that no one comes to help us. And looking at the way we develop ChatGPT and AI without any regard for the consequences, you can't really blame anybody out there in space for not wanting us around. We seem pretty irresponsible.
Never more so than now. Everything's being trashed. And I, again, don't believe that it doesn't stop at the highest visible level of globalist control. There's an
Correct.
ET component here. And if you don't see that, that's fine. But it's rather obvious that there is a bad, evil group on this planet. And they made a deal with probably an equally bad and evil group off planet, or more than one group. There's a lot going on here.
Oh, yes.
So, and that's one of the things in The Last Harvest. You get an idea of the dimensions, the dimensionality of the power structure here, and the multiplicity of layers, levels. But when you boil it all down, it's just basically the observable same people running the show. Call them money changers, call them whatever you want, I don't care. But those who control the wealth control the money. When you control the money, you control the game. And that's their policy. Very smart.
Yeah, it works for them now until they are no longer required themselves. Because in the end, what's more important than money is just raw power.
Yeah, that's true. It's really amusing to me how these World Economic Forum types and Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, those people actually think that they're a cut above. It's like a caste system, the planet, in their eyes. And they're a cut above, and they're going to be spared. No, it's not going to work that way. Because when they're no longer useful, they're gone.
Exactly. It is true that on a certain level, you could argue they are a cut above due to their genetic modifications, but it won't prevent them from being slaughtered once they outlive their usefulness. It's not like it really makes them special. They're different, but not special. They end up in the grave along with everyone else, just on a different time frame.
All true. The idea of dead people, the soul goes on, the idea of that somehow being coordinated into a matrix of power from the dimension of the dead, which you talked about rather directly earlier. How does that work? We don't have a lot of time, but where does that come in terms of energetics and quantum, and how does that work?
Well, that's a bit of a complicated question, but I think within the context of what I was explaining earlier, in order to access human beings' psyche when you are inside the planet in another dimension, you need a way to reach through and communicate to them. So you have to create a sort of resonance factor. So if you genetically hybridize human beings with dead genetic material, there's a certain resonance between dead genetic material and the realm of the dead, and therefore it becomes much easier to communicate. I think that's one way I could explain it in a simple way that would be easy to...
Well, that wraps it up. All right, let's remind people you're going to be in Las Vegas at the Luxor.
Correct.
We'll have one more visit before you go there. We'll remind everyone again. But Damien will be there as publisher and editor of The Last Harvest. He'll be giving away free audiobooks at that table, and I'm sure he'll be happy to autograph them for you as well. Would this be on a DVD kind of an audio disc?
Actually, I have USB business cards that contain all this. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, yes, very high-tech.
I'm behind the curve on that. That's wild. All right, my friend, thank you. That was a good chat, as always. And The Last Harvest is the book. And we'll talk to you again before you go to Las Vegas.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Damien. Good night. All right, gang, we'll be right back with more.